This is CliffCentral.com.
Sanbona Nonke, welcome to the show. It's Frankly Speaking. Thanks to Gareth and the gang. Back again tomorrow. We are without Rorisang Shabalala again. He is doing his thing overseas. Peshaya, he is flying the flag high. I think he's still in London, but let's hope he's coming back soon. Today, we are continuing our series, Frankly Speaking, Is There a Way to Change South Africa's Major Economic Challenges? We're speaking to different people and different sects of South Africa to find out what we can do as South Africans, what people are doing, and how we can potentially change the needle. It's a huge debate, very interesting. We spoke to someone in education, looking at different types of education. You've got to check out that podcast as well. And today I am very, very lucky to have the brilliant Mr. Zwelinzima Vavi in studio today. We're going to be looking at what the trade unions could do to change the major economic challenges. Also, what labor could do to change the major economic challenges, and if there is anything that they can do, I'm sure we're gonna hear it all from Mr. Vavi himself. Good morning, welcome to the show. Thanks for having us, or thanks for coming. Thanks for having us.
Well,
it's your show.
It's your show. And I'm
it's
just
your show. You asked the questions.
I'm invitee. Yeah. So I'm going to have to field lots of questions.
How are you doing today?
No, well, I'm fine. I'm fine. South Africa is getting very hot. And we're hitting 31, 32 in Johannesburg in the first week of September.
It's beautiful. Where's the
I
rains?
Think we're going to go for a braai, national braai of ourselves by November, December.
Let me tell you something.
Incredible, isn't it?
For those that have got hay fever, it has been disastrous.
Me too.
You haven't?
No, I had had a flu carried for 2 or 3 weeks now. Never before.
It is
never.
The worst thing. Never. I want to gouge my eyes out. It's absolutely terrible.
Never. And up to now, my chest is not really cleared, but no. I run around.
You're looking good, sir. You're looking very, very good at the moment. And been seeing a lot of you in the news, so it's going to be interesting to catch up. The last time we spoke to you, you were all hush-hush about what your next step was, and then suddenly the explosion of what we knew was coming, SAFTU. So it's very exciting to see that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Also going to talk about the role of unions, the role of labor, and what you think those two roles or those two players can do in South Africa to really fix the challenges that South Africa faces. And let's be honest, those challenges are big. Let's start with your perspective. South Africa at the moment, I mean, what does it look like from Zwelinzima Vavi's eyes?
Well, we've said that it's a roller coaster, it's a crisis of unimaginable proportions. And I've likened it with a boat in the rough seas at the middle of the night. And unfortunately, under the leadership of a captain that is blindfolded and that doesn't know whether we're moving towards the iceberg or to the left or right or north or south and waiting to implode any time. Mm. And I've said many years ago that we are sitting on a ticking time bomb and we don't know when it will explode. We should be very thankful that there is no major upheaval. And because of that, I think that we are sitting, those of us who are in the leadership, in an emergency room that should be searching for an immediate solution to the crisis at hand.
Mm.
And that's where the frustration is in South Africa today. There is just no discourse that is serious enough that involves people beyond the boardrooms, beyond the select few of the elites, mm-hmm. and a dialogue about the real problems that are facing South Africa. Every South African space is occupied with the negativity of the Zuptas, the Zumas, and the Guptas, and corruption, and the court appearance, and the appeal, and the killing, and the violence and the ANC conference, none of which is about the real issues South Africa is facing today. And that should frustrate all of us.
It almost feels like the leadership, business leadership, political leadership, social leadership, feels so far from the coalface at the moment that they don't actually know what's going on and their fights are between themselves about things that are really not affecting or being trivial compared to what's really going down, you know, on the work floors.
we've become accustomed to this crisis. We don't feel it anymore. Mm. It has been normalized. And we have embraced a business as usual, even though we've heard leader after leader saying that we're now embarking on a business is unusual. But in reality, the policy choices that have been made seems to be just repeat what have been tried and tested and failed for the two decades now in our democracy. And at some point when we were very hopeful that the Zuma administration is going to represent a different direction,
when exactly was that, Mr.
In 2009.
At the conference.
At the conference. I mean, we had five priorities that we pushed, and we were quite excited.
Mm.
And when the budget was presented by Minister of Finance Pravin Gordhan, we said, hold on, this looks like
there's a problem here, right?
is the old wine in new bottles.
Now you wear an incredible hat in South Africa at the moment, and I'm not just saying the hat you have on today, but more importantly, the hat you wear as head of a trade union. The conversations you must be involved in must be unbelievably diverse and interesting. You, from business leaders to on the ground workers. What's the sense among South Africans at the moment, specifically the workers, about where we are?
Believe me, one of my strengths, or others think that it's a weakness, I believe it is a hell of a strength. I interact with everybody in South Africa.
Mm.
I speak literally to every South African. I engage. And I don't only find comfort in talking to those who are my ideological bedfellows.
Mm.
I speak to those that I disagree with. And I always believe that even in the disagreement, there's something common between all people of one nation, irrespective of how big differences may appear to be on the surface. But there is common concern. I've not met a single business person who says the crisis of unemployment is not a big problem, or the youth unemployment is not something that should put us into an emergency gear, or who think that we shouldn't be doing something drastic about the state of education, healthcare, public transport system, and all of that. Everybody says we've got to be doing something. There will always be some differences about how and what we need to do practically. But that people identify the same challenges as common challenges, their own challenges, gives me hope that if we were to engage immensely, intensely, purposefully, we could really have a possibility of reaching a big ground of common ground. And I always hold that hope. One time we will find a way around this. And sometimes people say the crisis does force a common ground. Currently our backs are on the wall. I mean, we were rated by the ILO some few years ago, about 5-10 years ago, as the country that holds position number 7 in the entire world. In terms of a country with these levels of unemployment. We were rated number 3 when you look at the youth unemployment. I wonder now, because our unemployment have worsened, our poverty has worsened, we have now become the most unequal society in the world. And so I always want to check what are the latest ILO statistics saying where we are. We are in a crisis. I mean, we don't speak about it because we don't think that the people who should be getting solutions to this have their hearts and their minds in the right place. I think that these people are consumed by the narrow politics of divisions, and this is the most frightening part about the future of South Africa. I have come very, very uneasily, but when I've looked at my position of extreme privilege, having been the General Secretary of COSATU for 14 years, and before that, having been in the leadership of national leadership of COSATU since the eve of democracy from 1993, having been part of the discussions that led to the adoption of the RTP and a host of other policy documents, having battled intensely in boardroom discussions about what should be the solutions, having been organized marches and held demonstrations and engaged in no less than 3 national job summits, engaged in the presidential working groups on labor, having been into discussions with the business through the structure we created called the Millennium Labor Council, where we were trying to find one another. And I had come to the conclusion that, no, unfortunately, most of my leadership in the ANC honestly do not care about the plight of the ordinary people. The conference in December is not going to be about sorting out the political, ideological, policy big differences, because there is none. The policy conference and the national conference has become the places to sort out the eating queue. And
who's eating first, huh?
Who's going to eat first and who's going to hold the power to distribute patronage? And the issue of jobs, youth unemployment, the state of education, healthcare, public transport system is, by the way, in order to angle, to outmaneuver a faction, and so that you can be in a pole position to distribute patronage. And I hope I can be proven wrong at some point down the line. But look, I watched very closely the policy conference of the ANC. I knew that the 5 days were spent on what I can only call factional differences. What is why to monopoly capital? Discussing that for 5 days. How does the fork look like? What we call it? Is it a soil turning instrument? Is it a digging instrument? Is it a planting instrument? Is it a...
Oh, my goodness.
5 days, nothing tangible coming out about the real crisis facing workers and the poor in society. And that devastates me. It worries me because it says even if labor can get its house in order, or business, or civil society formations, there is unlikely to be a partner that can drive those negotiations, channel those energies into finding solutions for the crisis at hand.
So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the two big candidates that have come out, and maybe some of the smaller candidates as well. If you've just joined the show, welcome to it. We are speaking to none other than Mr. Zwelinzi Mavavi. Zwelinzi, I don't want to get your title wrong at SAFTU. I mean, I just call you the man at SAFTU, but I mean,
I'm General Secretary.
General Secretary at SAFTU, doing his thing as he always does. It didn't take him long to get back on the horse and get onto the unions again. If you want to chat to us, if you want to ask us your questions, please do hit us up on WhatsApp. You can hook us up and give us your questions there at Cliff Central, as well as on WeChat, as well as on Twitter, Yebo_LEVY. You can talk to us, ask us your questions that you want us to ask Zwelinzi Mavavi. I see a few coming through here. I'll try to get to all of them. And there are many. You are a very popular man, I must say. Very, very popular man. I don't know if it's good or bad. I'll get to those questions later.
I'm really surprised.
Let's just talk a little bit about the union's role and the power that they hold. Because we've seen on this continent post-liberation struggles and post-liberation movements that have taken power and then been removed by unions and union uprisings, effectively. We saw it in Zambia. It would have happened in Zimbabwe with Morgan Tsvangirai, but unfortunately he was jailed, and then we saw that the elections were rigged. Let's talk a little bit about South Africa. Is there an opportunity for that to happen in South Africa, where the unions have so much power that they could actually create a factional group, a change, complete overhaul in post-liberation politics in South Africa?
Let me start from where you started. The trade union movement in the continent had played a pivotal role in ensuring that we defeat colonialism, mm-hmm. dictatorship, and we give birth to democracy across the continent.
Right.
But the story is one, post the colonial era, the liberation movements that take over have systematically, across the board, sidelined the trade union movement, saw them as a threat, and began to label them as stooges of the West, funded by the imperialists, and to cause regime change, treated them with suspicion, and as a result, the trade union movement got weakened and lost their influence in most parts of the African continent.
Right.
So as we speak, the trade unions are pretty weak, fragmented because of their associations with political parties at some stages,
mm-hmm.
but because of the power problems inside the trade union movement, who suddenly mirror what happens in the political front with their own shenanigans, factionalism, all manner of things that only help to weaken them.
Jeez, that's a copy and paste in South Africa as well, isn't it?
I can take you to Namibia as we speak. There's a split. I can take you to Angola. There was a split. There's a split in Zimbabwe. There's a split in Zambia. And the OTM of Mozambique has been weakened and made almost like a labor desk of Frelimo.
Mm-hmm.
The unions in Swaziland are split. The unity have not really led to a multiplying of their strength. In Lesotho, the fragmentization continues. Then I can take you up both west and east of the continent. And I have had a huge advantage of having been vice president in the ICTU Africa. So we know it as we know our hands, the state of the trade union movement in the continent. In South Africa, we're sitting now with having this conversation when the trade union movement is tremendously weakened because the power of the prime trade union that was celebrated all over the world, seen as a model of how trade unions should combine mass mobilization and engaging in a boardroom to produce some result that can benefit workers. That union was targeted for what we call domestication. It was hollowed out and it has been captured. It was deliberately fragmented, and it dismissed its biggest and the most militant union, NUMSA, and that led to divided sympathies across all of the unions. It can no longer even raise a finger. It says it is going to hold a strike on the 27th of September against state capture. Is going to be subjected into massive ridicule, and is going to be made a further laughing stock because it have lost its power. And the fragmentization has continued. The over 400 unions are registered in the Department of Labor. I mean, that's unheard of. This is as bad as the situation is in Mauritius and other small economies where there's a rush away from one industry, one union, one country, one federation into a one man, one union type of a situation, one worker, one union. And that's not good for workers because then employers, both the state as an employer, which is now an employer of a liberation party that is clinging in power in the context of this worsening poverty, unemployment, and inequalities, will manipulate those divisions and use the old dictum of a divide and rule. So is employers in the workplace. Even though employers that are more enlightened don't like fragmentation, because they know the price that they pay when unions compete against each other instead of advancing the interest of the workers. And so we are at that state, I mean, in a terrible state. You're now asking a question, what can unions do from that very position of weakness?
Mm.
Well, we've given a birth to a new federation in the context of this crisis that I'm speaking about. 21st of April saw the rise of a new kid on the block, the South African Federation Trade Unions, that I'm very privileged to be first and founding general secretary. And it is absolutely alive to the crisis that we're speaking about the state of the trade union movement. And it had had three very important discussions that have led to a development of a program to address the real problem. Here's a real problem in South Africa. The workers that need the unions the most are so poorly organized.
Mm.
The farm workers, after 23 years of democracy, only have a 5% representation in terms of union, or 5% only of workers who are in the agricultural sector are members of any union. Now, we all know the history of agriculture in South Africa is so linked to the apartheid.
Mm.
If you remember, the National Party, when it came to power in 1948, it had promised two constituencies that it will deliver, of course, in this racially skewed way. And that was the mining and the agriculture. Unions have played a tremendous role to break that chain.
Mm.
The mining industry had such a long history of unionization, started by the white mine workers who had strikes in 1913, 1915, 1921, 1922, and 1946 when the black workers or African workers started to organize, 1987. Under the leadership of Cyril Ramaphosa. So there's a long history there. And as a result, the situation has somehow improved in the mining industry.
Mm.
Single-sex hostels, even though there's still instances, but have been done away with. And the promotion of tribalism and the brutalization, the extremely low pay. Mm. All of those things have been dealt with. At least workers, they have now medical aids, provident funds, holidays, and all of that. But in the farms, the situation is to the opposite. They rely solely on the sectoral determinations from the government. Government is so weak to enforce that.
Mm.
And so, as a result, farm bosses do as they wish. Farm workers still get beaten and buried in shallow graves with nobody reporting that issue in the police station, because if you do, you will end up next to the street spending very long nights and weeks evicted in the farm. So brutalization is still the face of that industry, and yet only 5% of them are in unions.
So this
you can say the same thing about transport, about the retail, the hotel, the cleaning, the security services, all of those industries. So what SAFTU promises to do is to say, let's focus on the sectors of the economy which needs the union the most, and if we were to succeed, maybe we can then succeed to move the pay, to close the wage gaps, and to give dignity to millions and millions of workers who are currently sidelined.
If you've just joined us, welcome to the show. It is Frankly Speaking. We're speaking to Mr. Zwelinzi Mavavi. He is the Secretary General of SAFTU, a new union, the new kid on the block, as you said, which I liked. So this is what you're speaking about, and we need to get to some of these questions that are coming through on Twitter and on WeChat. But this was what you're speaking about in the papers the other day, with organizing 74% of the unorganized. This is your strategy, isn't it? It's not to go to mines. It's to go to the farm workers, the retail, transport. Let's just talk about when you think that unions go wrong. So my anecdotal experience on unions is very, very limited. But one of the experiences I've had is in education, with the teaching unions, and how incredibly powerful they are within education. Spoke to a number of headmasters in the Johannesburg area, and a lot of them point to the unions to say that actually one of our biggest problems with the enforcement of education is that teachers who belong to unions then don't actually take up their posts correctly and don't actually perform their roles. Is that something that you've experienced in your lifetime as COSATU General Secretary? I think SATU was part of COSATU at some stage. I'm not sure if they've moved now to you guys or not. But when unions go wrong, how do you fix it as one of the leaders within it?
Well, the many mistakes that have been committed by the trade union movement in South Africa, quite a number. Politically, in my view, now with the benefit of the hindsight, and this is not going to be about, oh, he's angry, but with all of the advantages that I spoke about and the experiences that I had to go through personally and it's part of the collective, I believe that the trade union should have found a strategy to develop an arm's length relationship with the liberation movement, even if they love it, such as the ANC and COSATU. But more so, when the ANC embraced neoliberal approach to development, to economic policies that favored the bosses through the adoption of the growth, employment and redistribution policy way back in the GEAR policy in June 1996.
Yeah.
I think that the next Congress of COSATU should have called it a day. Should have said,
we need to break this tripod.
We
alliance.
Need to break this alliance. It will compromise us because we will not be able to fulfill the promise of a better life for all with this policy. We will not be able to deliver on a promise of creating decent jobs for the unemployed or addressing in a serious way issues of poverty and inequalities. We stayed inside with a mistaken belief, which COSATU is still continuing with, by the way, that we can use our influence internally to change the direction of that policy. Also, what we did, we put all of our energies in getting rid of Thabo Mbeki and replace him with Jacob Zuma, only to find out that what we were doing is to replace the one brutal oppressor of workers with the worst one, with the worst abuser of worker. And so we found ourselves, and I think COSATU, if they were to be honest now, looking at the statistics, South Africa's recent reports, they paint one direction. Unemployment is getting worse under Jacob Zuma now. Poverty has gone worse, 55% under Jacob Zuma's stewardship, and that South Africa have cemented its position as the most unequal society in the world. Above all, we now facing a phenomenon of corruption and abuse of state resources for personal benefit. And yet COSATU still clinging on with the hope that December conference is going to come with a different scenario for them. And you can see they're even calling a strike to try and advance that agenda and repeating the same mistake. One sign of stupidity is a continuous repetition of the same mistake over and over with the hope that you're going to achieve a different outcome. That is the first mistake, I think, the biggest mistake the trade union movement have committed. I think that had we invested in strengthening the trade union movement, spending 80% of our time in each and every executive meeting in discussing how we organizing farm workers, domestic workers, security workers, informal sector workers, and how we creating structures of the unemployed in order to cement unity between the unemployed and the employed workers, how we should take up battles against outsourcing, casualization, usage of labor brokering, and all of that, we would have achieved the objective of growing COSATU to 4 million by 2015. Instead of achieving that, COSATU is now going back. It was 2.2 million members in 2012. But when Jacob Zuma brings Zimande invested in breaking it up, it's now way below that 2 million. They claim to be 1.7. I know that they are lying through their teeth. They are way below that. And so that's a real mistake. So the people who have really paid the price for this alliance is ordinary workers, because their issues completely took the second or the back seat, and the issues of advancing the interest of leaders to go to parliament took the first seat. That's the first mistake. The second mistake was that we didn't focus on building the strength of the trade union movement and investing in strengthening that relationship with civil society and making the organs of people's power the center of power, such that even though you have your formal political processes, that both the political formations and their politicians individually and even business will know that in society there's a counterbalancing factor in the form of the civil society. It has been destroyed. The only counterbalancing factor now have become the courts. It shouldn't be like that. That's abnormal. The counterbalancing factor must be civil society formations who should say to the political leadership, hold on, you are messing up now. Or hold on, can we work together on this one? Or can we make sure that we can bring the national health insurance faster than having to wait until 2025 or something like that? And that counterbalancing has been weakened. There's some hope now. I mean, this Zubta crisis have led to the revival of the civil society, and you can see the numbers of marches that are happening, that maybe there will be a regrouping. But is regrouping from a position of weakness. So the TAC, the Treatment Action Campaign, have been weakened. And because people think that the fact that we now have the biggest HIV and AIDS program means the struggles is over. The Section 77 is struggling with funding. The Social Justice Network in the Western Cape is struggling with funding issues. The Equal Education Campaign, and which have done such an important work to expose crises of infrastructure in our schools, is struggling with issues of funding. We shouldn't be like that, and we should have consolidated that that organ of people's power, so that people do not only rely on the parliamentary processes only to hold leadership to account, that they will rely on their own strength on the ground, invest in the street committees, in the area committees, to ensure that we can hold our councillors and our mayors to account. That's where the second biggest mistake lies, I think.
So let's look at this a little bit now. You've got an opportunity to start afresh, effectively, with SAFTU, and that is exciting. How do you stop the problems that we've seen in the past? Because here's the thing, right? I've seen your manifesto. I've seen what you want to do online. By December, you want at least 1 million members, right? Your future in 5 years is to have 3 million to 5 million members, making you one of the biggest organizations, membership organizations, if not the biggest membership organization by far, right? You trump the ANC, if we're to believe their numbers of 771,000, so on and so on and so on, members, by 3-4 times. How do you stop the political courting that surely will come to your door? I mean, we're already seeing that your interests are aligned with a lot of some of the political parties in South Africa, specifically the EFF. We saw you guys march with the EFF to the Zupta mine, the Gupta mine. let me not mince my words here. The Gupta mine. How do you stop political courting so that you do have that arm's length away from whoever's coming into power? Because the way the ANC is going, it might not be them for very much longer.
The biggest lesson we made, or we have learned, is that the trade union movement must be independent, but not apolitical. must be campaign.
Not apolitical. So you do want to be
political. We want to be a political animal. We want to be a political factor. We are debating a question arising out of the report we presented to our Congress in April.
Mm-hmm.
We outlined the crisis in its detail as we have been doing so for many years. This is unemployment. This is how it affects the black majority, the youth, the women, the people in the rural areas, in the townships. This is the life in unemployment in all of these informal settlements, mushrooming in Johannesburg, Durban, Cape Town, all of the big cities.
Mm.
We've gone to analyze the crisis of poverty, of inequalities, the humiliating factor arising out of that. The corruption, the crisis of the Zuma administration, the reality that the ANC was captured by white monopoly capital on the eve of democracy way back in 1994 to abandon the more radical posture that is in the Freedom Charter, that the wealth of the country shall be shared, and that the national mineral wealth, the banks, the monopoly capital shall be transferred to the ownership of the people as a whole, and so forth and so forth. And so everybody then says, what do we do? It's getting worse. Notwithstanding the noise we're making, the march we've been holding, in, we've been marching and to Pretoria, to Durban, everywhere. People have been marching in their thousands, but the marches are not stopping Zuma. They are not stopping the ANC from continuously having an internal battle that have nothing to do with the real issues South Africa is facing. They are not stopping the alliance from being at war with itself, ignoring the crisis of unemployment, poverty, inequality, and corruption. They're not stopping everything that is happening. So people, we had a debate, what do we do? And some union says, we've said we're independent, we're not apolitical, we've got to talk about whether this does not impose a scenario that we must contest power, political power, and that we must create a workers' party, a labor party that is going to contest power. Otherwise, they say, the comrades who are coming from that, who are making that argument, we will end up marching over and over until we walk next to our shoes. Nothing is going to change unless there's a political power contesting power from a left perspective and only to advance the interest of a broader marginalized sections of the working of society, the workers, the poor, the unemployed. And there's now a very serious discussion inside the structures of the of SAFTU. Of course, others will say, hold on, hold on. What will that mean to our principle of independence? Move slow.
You cannot eat and talk, I believe.
You can't eat and talk. Others says, oh, hold on, that's a good idea, but hold, wait a little bit. Let's build SAFTU as a factor. And let's create this gravity of power towards the civil society and trade union movement. And others says, hold on, there's left parties already existing in South Africa. They all say they're socialist orientated, this EFF, ASAPO, PAC, and the Fourth International, this and that and that. Why don't we talk to them to consolidate unity of the left and contest power? Maybe the trade union movement can be involved in the creation of something new, coherent, and to talk about this crisis of poverty, unemployment that is getting worse. So there's that discussion, and I don't know where it is going to land up. We want it to be a very open, deep discussion, because if you rush it and you make it a leadership discussion, it can create problems. Workers like the brand independent. We've got to protect that independence of SAFTU so that we don't get sucked into another alliance. We don't move from the frying pan.
Sounds like another alliance.
Yeah, we don't want to move from a frying pan to the fire again because we love this discussion about power. So It's going to be a very interesting discussion. Yeah.
Right. I'm going to, I did say I was going to take one or two comments here, and they are flying in at the moment. You obviously needed to be at that iStore, because I can see that your phone never stops here, because this is
absolutely. I call it a national call center.
You know, you should get one or two more people on your national call center there. But we've got a question from WeChat here saying, Mr. Vavi, in as much as we support workers' rights to a good living wage, given all the profits that the mining companies seem to be shipping offshore, is there no better way to change the narrative than through union action, which generally results in no work, no pay, meaning in as much as they may get a better increase in real terms, they are worse off in the short to medium term, because it paves the way for the likes of loan sharks, microfinanciers, that results in the never-ending debt cycle. Is it not better to find a constructive way to work with employers to get a more equitable position in a business mine? Speaking of mines, with the improved efficiencies through mechanization, so this is the second part of this very, very long question. We in South Africa are quite fortunate to have such a large workforce being employed by the sector. Mass action results in losses, the results of which in unemployment, unfortunately. Do unions, who I might add still get paid when workers aren't getting paid, consider the long-term effects of the country's unemployment rate before embarking on mass action? I ask because over the past years, the results have been the same, granted the commodity prices are softer. But I have not done the research, but I would think that irrespective of jobs have been shed as a result of union action. That comes from Yao Pepra. Any thoughts on that?
Very, very thought-provoking. What, is that an email or what?
It's actually from Facebook.
Thank you very much.
Mm.
This is what we are debating in the Federation. The crisis is getting worse. Mines are mechanizing, and they are shifting their profits and elsewhere. Loads and loads of the mineral resources are being shifted into the harbors, and they are moving out of the country.
Mm.
South Africa's balance of payment continues to worsen.
We saw the business boycott as well.
There is an effective, we call it a strike, an investment strike.
Mm.
There's around 2 trillion investable cash of the economy in the banks. There's reluctance. It's a combination of uncertainty as a result of the political crisis and the ANC problems, but also there is no sufficient economic activity that will crowd in and make those people to release those resources and make them active, and we are allowing cash to move out. And thanks to the misguided monetary policies that were adopted from 1996, the reduction of the foreign exchange controls, and we even allowing, there's no mechanism whatsoever within the SARS to effectively ensure that private capital and the white collar crooks do not move cash out of the economy through the illicit cash flows.
Mm.
And there's no capacity. We think this is what we need in response to this question. I'm sorry he's not going to agree with me, I'm sure. We will have to, we're going to have to combine the mass pressure. And we are preparing to mobilize in the streets, because we don't want to make this situation appear to be normal. You can't normalize 36.6 unemployment rate and you see no single march.
Mm.
We want to put 100,000 people in the streets of Pretoria in November, and they must be marching for jobs, for an economy that is taking into consideration the youth, the crisis of unemployment amongst the women, the rural people, the crisis in the education sector that reproduces this unemployment, poverty, and inequality, the crisis of housing. in the cities like Johannesburg, and the fact that government is falling way below its own targets when it comes to building houses. You saw our people in Lenasia and in El Dorado Park saying that there's not a single house built here, even though they're saying for coloureds and Asians. Mm. But unfortunately, the statements are not far from the truth. We want all of those people to go to Pretoria and to say to President Zuma, give us a plan. Tell us what you're going to be doing to shake the status quo and to undermine the pillars of apartheid and colonial economy.
But isn't it such a fine balance? Because
I'm coming to that.
Okay, okay.
On the other side, we accept that mass action alone does not produce all of the results. It creates the pressure, but it does not create jobs guaranteed. So we've got to engage. We've got to engage with business. And we've started to talk to them very quietly to say to them, guys, you have to be mad upstairs if you can't see that eventually these levels of unemployment will not guarantee a return of your own investment in this economy.
Mm.
You have to be absolutely crazy if you not realizing that there will be an implosion in this country, or that the status quo must be maintained where the CEOs earn 17, 18 million rands per annum. If you look at the study that was conducted by Deloitte, published last month, that says the first 100 company CEOs listed in the JSE are earning 17.9 million annually.
Mm.
And if you think that that's the future of South Africa, whereas the in 2014, the median salary of a worker was 3,400, surely you know that that's going to create a havoc down the line. You can't sustain the South Africa of rich white and overwhelmingly poor black Africans who are indigenous in terms of the historical tracing of humankind, at least in the past 500 years. You have to respond to that. And interestingly, a number of them now says, hold on, let's talk.
Mm.
And I think we've got to say, let's talk.
Mm.
Let's talk. What do we do about the mining industry? Do we continue want to see chrome moving to China, or do we arrest that chrome into this country and use it to build a serious steel industry in the context of the backlogs that we face in terms of housing,
right,
or in terms of building infrastructure? Do we continue to take every platinum out into the car manufacturing centers in the world? Do we arrest it? Yeah. What about the fact that the manufacturing, the platinum industry is facing a threat with the introduction of the electronically based cars, the self-driving cars? I'm told 45% of platinum now goes to car manufacturing.
Mm.
What if that dries up? What will happen to the thousands and thousands of workers in the belt? Let's talk about the diamond. What about the fact that there may be new forms of diamond that are attractive, and things that are not diamond, but that makes the demand for diamond to be less? Why are we having a Kimberley that is absolutely a ghost town? And are we not learning anything? What about Stilfontein? Are we going to allow Carletonville to be a ghost town, or eventually Rustenburg itself to be ghost town? Or should we not be talking about mining? Should not be talking about mining and industrialization? Should not be talking about skilling of the workforce in this country? And should not be talking about our education system that can be redesigned to support a South Africa that wants to exploit its endowment by these mineral resources? What about agriculture? What about the changing seasons? What about that the fact that Transkei and the Northwest are regarded as richest soil in the world? Why are we not turning those the gold of this country? and moving forward. Mm. Where are the secondary industry from the agriculture? Why are we not building technicons and universities in Transkei and in the Northwest focus on the usage of land? And so that's the conversation I think we need in this country.
But that's a lot of questions.
It's lots of questions. But unfortunately, it's questions arising out of the crisis. Mm. Maybe during the crisis, you're forced to think more. And I think that we've got to think more. We're putting on the table as the labor movement that the mines must be nationalized. And I know people get shocked. Where are they coming from? But what else do we do? Do we continue to see this this plundering?
Yeah.
It's plundering. Mm. Or do we now say, no, hold on. Let's talk about nationalization. Let's talk about the role of the state. Should we not be creating a state company to invest, but not what we fear again, these left projects or left thinking are being discredited by the Zuma administration. Nationalization, people ask, what about Eskom? What about the destruction of Telkom, of SAA, SAPC?
10 billion rand.
Man. So the whole progressive notion of using the nationalization as it has been used everywhere else in the world gets discredited because we've allowed these guys to employ and to deploy family members such as Dudumyeni, family connections, and now we're sitting with 10 billion that we must pay. What about SAPC that was almost collapsed by a Standard 7 thing? That's what discredit a developmental active state that should be driving a development in the country.
Let me ask you as we slowly wrap up. I mean, this conversation has gone so fast, and if you've missed any of it, I implore you to go listen to the wise words of this young man, Mr. Zwelinzima Mavava. You see, I've given you a compliment that you didn't even know it. Wait till I give you wait till I start attacking you. Let me ask you, there's been a few questions on WeChat here about your thoughts coming up in December and the policy conference, or not the elective conference. Do you think that there can be no corruption at the branch level? Do you think that the branches have been captured? And do you think that this is just a waste of time and it's just a formality and we will see NDZ potentially being the next president of the ANC? Now he has to use his words very carefully depending on where he sits.
That is a question. I have read the ANC secretariat reports ringing alarm bells way back 1997 in Mafeking. Over and over again, up to the recent presentation in Nazareth. I've read the speeches of the presidents of the ANC, from Nelson Mandela, Thabo Mbeki, Jacob Zuma also making the same point about the battle against the capture of the branches through money and the shenanigans of factionalism and the weakening of the political and ideological propositions, the advancement of the politics of careerism, and the emerging trends of me first to hell with everybody else, and the law of the jungle, the survival of the fittest, the shootings, the killings in Mpumalanga, 16 people last time I counted.
Mm. KZN.
KZN, 20 in 2 years. Mm. Councillors being slaughtered. This weekend there is yet another funeral and of Cindy Somakaka. And this is going on. There's even a commission in KwaZulu to look at what is going on.
Mm.
And if you sit down, Halima Mondlante, to speak about how damaged the ANC branch and how corrupted it has become and how easy it is to use money to sway people away from the mandates and the concerns of ordinary people, you better take positions. If you take a more pessimistic position, you can say anyone with sufficient bags of money will win the conference in December. If you take a more optimistic view, you will say, but the ANC knows that its back is on the wall, that if it continues in the same path, it will lose elections in 2019. And therefore, I have a sense that quite a number of people are alive to that, and they want to do the right thing and in order to save the ANC in 2019. And that's what the Cyril Ramaphosa faction will now say. But how big is that damage that Kgalema Motlanthe and Gwede Mandashe have been speaking about? Can you pull the rabbit out of the hat at this stage? When you talk about Zuma's corruption, that's what people forget. They forget that, as we've always maintained, that if you make a mistake to think that this have to do with just one big individual, you are making a terrible mistake. The clause and the clauses of corruption have gone so deep in the hands of so many leaders, from national to the branch. Corruption is deep and it is widespread. And unfortunately, these people, and I've been looking at the debates amongst these ANC factions, and I look at the candidates, and I look at these people turning around and saying things that look so good at this moment, 2-3 months before the conference. I look at the people who are backing them, all sides, and I said, yeah, you have to speak to somebody who have been a deputy president and a secretary general of the ANC to understand how terrible the situation has become. So if you take an optimistic view, you'll say people will come back to their senses.
What is your view?
I had come to an unfortunate conclusion that the conference is going to be a stage to sort out the eating queue and to decide who's going to be in a pole position to distribute patronage. And will I be proven wrong by history? The jury is out. I don't know. But that's my view. You know why I came to that view? It's because I asked myself a question, and I've said this publicly. Where are these men and women, these brave soldiers of the liberation struggle, who were in prison, who survived the death throes of the apartheid, who had close shave with the apartheid death squads in Gauteng, in KwaZulu-Natal, everywhere, who saw and left behind the bones of the comrades and their own family members in the neighboring states, who survived the bombings in Lesotho, in Mozambique, and everywhere in Zambia, in Botswana, you name them all, who were trained in everywhere, ideologically and politically. Where are they? How could they who chose politics of convenience, for example, when COSATU was being stripped, why didn't they speak up? When the Guptas took over the water cloth, where were they? When the West were being deployed in the state-owned enterprise to collapse them, why they didn't speak out? When Zuma was using state institutions against other comrades, why only now they're discovering that? When he was chasing the best of intelligence capacity ANC have invested in and trained, why they didn't say, but these are our comrades, why are you replacing them with Ntemeza, with all of these apartheid spies? That's what worries me. That's why I then feel that this all noise, including by Cyril Ramaphosa, because he has been there. He chose to go into the deputy president knowing what he was doing, that he was going to dance with a smelly, stinking hyena. He chose to advance his own political career at the expense of the principal. I have made similar mistakes myself in the past, thinking that I'm advancing the cause of the Digital Democratic Revolution. That's what worries me about December. And thank you.
Mr. Vavi, wow, what an hour. Thank you so much. The only thing we didn't discuss was the poor performance of your team, Arsenal. We'll keep that for another day. And if I remember, the good performance of your local team, I think it's Kaizer Chiefs, am I right? Oh, you're allowed to say that.
Only one game, I must say. Only one game.
Fine, you know, Shabalala's got his
We saw a 17-year-old and we're so desperate. He said, hey, who's this 17-year-old who's
scoring? See what I've started now. We have to end the show. This guy's now going to become a soccer commentator. Thank you so much for joining us. Listen, if you missed any of this conversation, check it out. cliffcentral.com/frankly speaking. We have had Mr. Vavi on before. You should listen to that show as well. He was in cahoots at that time with UDM leader Mr. Bantu Holomisa. It was a fascinating conversation as well. So check that out as well. Thank you, sir. And we'd love to have you again and hear more about you. I think we need an in-conversation with you just to hear about your life, because you've seen it all and we need to learn from you. So thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Have yourself a lovely day and we'll see you again next week. Ciao, ciao.
This is CliffCentral.com.